You are listening to Something Rather Than Nothing. Creator and host, Ken Vellante. Editor and producer, Peter Bauer. So, okay. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Something Rather Than Nothing podcast. My name is Rachel Lally, and you may have heard me before in the podcast, but I am doing an Irish invasion of the podcast. I'm taking over from KV, as we fondly call him in Ireland, Ken Vellante, and I am taking over for this week's episode. And I am joined this week by Daryl Parson of Solstice fame, we met under an umbrella on the top of the Austrian mountains.
the mountains got a very special place in my heart, and it was great to meet you up there.
Absolutely. Can you move slightly closer to your PC? I'm just worried about the sound.
I've got the sound going through my headset, so hopefully that will work.
But good stuff. Daryl, where are you right now?
Right now, I'm in a little mining village, just about 10 minutes drive away from Pontefract in West Yorkshire. I moved here about 10, 11 years ago, and spent most of my time trying to get away from the place every weekend, traveling, etc. But obviously, with circumstances being as they are over the last few years, I've learned to reacclimatize myself with the surroundings and realize it is a lovely place, if a little bit quiet, really. It's an old mining village, so there's always this sense of politics and social, I wouldn't say deprivation, but certainly a sense of upheaval going on since all the industrial action happened back in the 80s. And, that kind of thing carries forwards into the community today, even though kids around the village have no idea what the mines are, really, other than what their parents tell them. So as I've come here as an outsider, really, I've become the village weirdo, so to speak, and generally find my way through wandering around every day, enjoying the surrounding farmland, woods, etc., and just having a very peaceful life for a change. And it's been a very strange experience getting used to it, most definitely.
Sounds quite idyllic, and I totally relate with the sort of being the fish out of water, having been born in Dublin and my parents moved us to Kildare, which was right out in the countryside in Ireland, like in a little village, because you describe the place where you live as a village. And I haven't met many people who have lived in a village. And a village is just so much smaller than anyone gives it credit for. It's hard to imagine if you've never lived in one, but I know my village was pretty much a crossroads. There's three pubs, obviously, a school, a church, and that's pretty much it. So, like, what's in your village?
Well, you've got twice as many roads as we have. There's a single road that bisects the village from one side to the other. There's a few housing estates further up the top end that have been built in recent years. But, it's just one street that gets blocked off amusingly whenever it snows. But facilities, there isn't much, really. There's a couple of corner shops, a couple of pubs. Not that I've ever dared go into them.
Really?
Well, it's just like they do have the vibe of being local pubs for local people. And
oh, my God, I definitely. Like, I'm like a local in my local pub for local people. My dad is like a celebrity in our local pub. That's kind of mad.
Well, in Yorkshire, it takes a while for people to get used to you. And although I'm not a Yorkshireman myself, I've kind of paid my flat cap and whippet tax over the years. So it's, let's just say my neighbours are slowly getting used to me now. And maybe in about 10 years, I could risk popping into the working men's clubs that I don't know.
Oh my gosh, that's mental. Like the first thing I think my parents did when they were scoping out the house and stuff was like call into the local to see. Like my dad still goes in every week. And it's like, I think when I was growing up in like rural Ireland, it was like you went to mass on a Sunday to get the kind of gossip of who was going around. You know, it was after the church, like people would be like, oh, did you hear about Moira and Maisie and whatever? And like now it's like my dad goes to the pub and it's like that's where you hear who's well, who's sick, who needs something, who's working on what, who's building a house, who needs to lay, who's dinner, doing whatever. And yeah, it's all a bit mad.
Well, for me, what socialization I do with the neighbors is mostly at the gym, because luckily there's a gym in the village. So obviously in lockdown times, it's been ideal to just pop up there, 20-minute walk away, and keep looking after myself, as it were. So I've become the guy that people talk to when they want to talk about rock music at the gym.
Yeah, good. So that's not a bad place to be. So, okay, Dara, let's go back a little bit. So, okay, we've gone through like how we've met, which has been very unconventional. And like, you know, we don't know each other that well. So I have lots of stuff to ask you. I have a lot of things.
All bad, I hope.
So let's go in on the music angle, because we met each other through metal, and I, you know, that's where we're both at. And shout out to a couple of KV's friends, Kim Volante's mates, who are Solstice fans in the US, I have heard, and they're super excited to listen to this episode.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's always very exciting. I think when you're like in a country like Ireland or the UK, and then you're like, oh, there's a whole continent that like listens to our music. You know, you've probably got to play in the US, have you?
Not yet. I'm technically not allowed back in the US for various visa waivery type reasons.
Tell us more about that.
About just shortly after I moved here, I'd sold my house. I'd, you know, managed to actually make some money, even though it was a bit of a recession back then. Cleared off a mortgage. So I thought, what do I really want to do with my life? And at that point, I had an opportunity to go over to San Antonio, Texas, and work on films. So that was always been a lifelong dream to work in that kind of...
Very much my background. I went to film college, so I'm with you.
I didn't quite make it that formally, but I ended up interning with a group of lovely Mexican people called The Darkness, named after Tim Curry's character in Legend, not after the rock bands, but they were basically a horror special effects and film production company working out of a warehouse in the middle of the San Antonio wilds, completely in the middle of nowhere. And Texas, let's face it, it's a great place if you like scorpions, put it that way. So it was always, we're always fighting off some form of fauna infestation that was going on in there. But it was a very exciting experience. I got to cut my teeth on practical special effects, sculpting, a little bit of acting, some production work. So I was kind of on both sides of the camera while I was over there. Managed to wrangle my own IMDb page for my troubles, which was a nice bonus. But the issue was that I was coming through on a visa waiver. And although I was interning, these guys were not technically paying me other than in tacos. So I had my food, I had my lodgings, kind of worked out well. And for the first time I went over, and that was fine. And there's no complaints. Second time I went over, even though I'd requested to make sure it was still okay for me to go over, they noticed I was still on the full 90-day period of my visa waiver. So they, once I landed in Atlanta, they took one look at me, half deaf and confused because I got the cheap seat next to the engine for 8 hours. And that was a great experience as well, just going from being like living in Yorkshire for ages to going over to America. And there's this whole 8-hour rebirth tube concept where I could go over there and completely reinvent myself as to whoever I wanted to be. Because
as someone who grew up in the UK going to the US, like, what were the kind of cultural differences, or what were the things that you loved about the US, and what were the things that you loved about the UK then?
Well, I think the greatest thing that I took over there was my accent, because so many people came up to me and just said, "Daryl, I really, really trust what you're telling me." And it's like, I don't have a clue what I'm saying, but because I have that slight gravitas of having a British accent, they're so used to British actors in certain roles over there, they just lapped me up completely, and not as literally as I would have liked. But now it's just, in the end, when I went there the second time, 8-hour flight, all bleary-eyed and confused, they took one look at me and ticked me off on the bad list and took me into the interrogation room for a while. So I'm there waiting for my connection, thinking, am I going to make my connection? And they're asking me, how can you afford to live for yourself over in live in America for 3 months? Where's your income? And I explain, I was a computer programmer then, still technically am now. So I had money put by. I think I had about $2,000 put by on a prepaid credit card.
That would be pretty decent, no?
Yeah, but they said, how are you going to be able to live on that? And I just said, I'm going to buy food from supermarkets, and I'm going to cook for myself.
Not live in a five-star hotel.
Yeah, exactly. And they grumbled and groaned, but it ended up saying, okay, we'll let you in this time, but you can't come back in again. So it could be now. Things are different. It's a brave new world over there. And obviously my old passport expired. I could try again, but at the moment I've never really needed to, unfortunately.
COVID has been a plague on all of our houses. It's just been a nightmare for people in the arts. But I think especially bands, because... Well, bands and theatre. I'm in the theatre world. You can films. Okay, whatever, you can watch. You can stream a film online. The live show, the live experience, the thing that I live for is the liveness of events. So theatre and music and being the audience. So tell me,
shared experience.
What has COVID been like for you, like the last three years? I've lost all track of time. Time does not have any meaning anymore.
I know.
Like, it's what, like, what have you been able to do? What have you not been able to do? And how are you adapting?
I think the only constant in life is change. And we're always constantly adapting to become the people we need to be given the circumstances we find ourselves in. And I suppose pragmatically, I'm still in the one band I've always wanted to be in all my life. Seriously, this is just like the ultimate fanboy experience for me, being in Solstice. But obviously I'm in Solstice. Are we gigging? No. Are we recording? Well, actually I'm in the studio on Sunday just to lay down some bass. So
that's something to look forward to, guys.
But no, it's just the weird thing is, for being in the band, is that for me at least, I'm still in Yorkshire, but the rest of the band have bands scattered across the globe because they're stranded in different countries, waiting to get back based on regulations and whatnot, and obviously needing to be with people over in different countries. So some of my band members I haven't seen or talked to for a while. When we get everyone in the country when we can, we have a rehearsal. But unfortunately, it has been a very disconnected experience. And as obviously our I love the band to bits, and I am deeply grateful for the experience of being in the band, but I just want to get back on and play again. But realistically, we are in a situation now where live shows are becoming severely marginalized in favor of other entertainment options, which are slightly easier to manage. And I know that I remember you, didn't you guys have that weird social media event thingy where you had everybody penned into little pens watching some generic disco music or something on a stage somewhere? And there was,
I was directing a play online, and it was just so odd. Like, I'm directing a show with actors who were in their houses all across Dublin, and the script was written by an author in the UK, and part of it is like, the play is called A Marxist in Heaven, and it's about Marxism, and it has so much movement, and it's all about people coming together, and like trying to direct that show with people. You can't be in the same space together. It's just been really challenging, someone who's been in the band and is in bands, you need to be together. You need to vibe off each other and play with each other and be present. And I miss going to gigs so much. Like, I've been to one gig this year.
Well, that's more than a lot of people have managed, but I got really lucky in the middle of the year. One of my favourite venues down in London, a little occult bar called Helgi's, specialising kind of like it's a combination doom metal occult psychedelic bar. So it's just every aspect of my interests are all intersect perfectly in this place.
It sounds amazing.
It is my favourite haunt. One of the best places that I've ever been to and felt at home in throughout the globe. The moment that gig started happening again, they had a doom metal band called Parish on there. And that weekend, I was just straight on the train, straight down there, down the front, headbanging. And it just felt like a homecoming, because as much as regulations come and regulations go that tell us to restrain ourselves, tell us to restrict ourselves, there is that certain visceral need, that carnal need, to be in the thick of it all, with the music washing over you, feeling the social connection you make from looking over at somebody who's enjoying the music and they're smiling back. And as much as we've got our playlists and we've got a band camp and all of that, it's not the same as the sheer confusion of being in a dark painted room somewhere with an overloud PA. And as I've travelled around you, because I do back in the day, as you noticed with your metal.
Back in the day, 3 years ago. That like everything now will be like BC and BC, like before COVID and post COVID.
But now it's... one thing I found is that no matter where I travel to, there's always the dark painted room and the overloud PA. And it's a constant in our culture because, obviously if you're fans of a certain type of music, you get on with a certain type of people. And that's fair. That's fair to say, I think.
What type is that, Darrell?
Oh, good question.
Let's give it like five words.
I'd say five words to describe the people that I hang around with. Magical nonconformists with a sense of spirit and adventure about them. I don't know if that's five words or whatever, but yeah, it's adventurous nonconformists.
I'll let you wait with it. Just trying to make it as short as possible. Okay, that's really cool. Yeah, I can definitely identify with that. So, okay, Darrell, talk to me about your journey into art, into magic, into metal. Like, where did that begin for you?
I think it began in the 80s, and there was a kid at school, not me, this other kid, that people said, don't talk to that lad, don't talk to that lad. He's not one of the cool kids. He's not one of the clever kids. He's a bit of a nerd. He's a geek, whatever. And thing is, I've come from a situation where I've never settled wherever I've gone because I've been bounced up and down the country wherever. So I've usually been the outsider. And I saw this lad being bullied and picked on, and I made a friend of him. And he was into, it was the 80s. We were like just dipping into teenagers, and he was into Games Workshop. So and he's sort of getting into that kind of nerdy tabletop war game behavior. And from that was the time when the magazine they had, White Dwarf, had a flexi disc on the front from a band called Sabbat. So this weird sort of outsider, nerdy sort of person actually started to introduce me into more extreme music. And that was about the limit of our contact. He was like this gateway of like interesting stuff. But then Games Workshop then brought out Bolt Thrower, Realm of Chaos picture disc. Wow. And my idea of music at that point was heavily into stuff like Hawkwind and maybe some movie soundtracks, because that was kind of like where my attitudes lay. And obviously, being a kid, not into drugs or anything, but into Hawkwind, that was a weird start of my life. But
that's a weird start. Yeah.
But
I love this, by the way, because like I was born in 86 and I feel like I should have been born like 10 years earlier. All of the music that I love is like, I grew up in the new metal kind of metal revival. And like, for me, it was all about going backwards. And I'm just like, I would have loved to be in the thick of it in the 80s, like buying albums. Because I was always like, oh my God, this album that was released in 86 when I was born, like so many good albums were released in 86, like so many great metal albums. Like I feel like the year I was born was like the pinnacle of metal. And I was like, I fucking miss it. Like if I had just been like a few years, if I had just been born earlier, like I could have totally like appreciated this a lot more.
Well, that's the thing. To take things off in a slightly video game track here, there's a video game that came out a few years back called Brutal Legend, and it was like a sort of video game about heavy metal, and it had a Jack Black doing the voiceover of the roadie character in it, Eddie Riggs, and play on Eddie from Maiden, and Riggs, the guy who did Maiden's artwork. But at the start of it, he's there talking to another roadie, and he just says, you know what, man, do you know when I wish I'd been born in the 70s? No, the early 70s. And no, that hits exactly when I was born, and I just fell in love straight away. It's like, yep, they're talking to me with this video game.
Oh, yeah.
And I was born
too late. You know, someone should have had sex earlier. That's all I'm saying. So Christian Catholic Ireland has a lot
to add. we've all been born too late, but St. Vitus. But now for me, I didn't really get heavily into the music until I moved to Bradford in the early 90s. And previously, I've been living up in Sunderland and down south in Essex. So I've kind of like never quite settled and bounced up and down the country as my...
Oh, why did you move so much, Daryl? What was that about?
All right. Well, basically, my mother was from up north and my father was from down south. But they never got on as well as they could do. So I was kind of bounced to custody one side of the country or another. So, it is what it is. But that's hence me having a really weird accent now, because I've got this sort of like Heinz 57 combination of
accents. That's really funny because I could never play. I was like trying to figure out where your accent was from. But like people say the same with me because I was born in Dublin but grew up in Kildare. So people always say, "Oh, you sound like a really posh Dublin person, but not also from Dublin." So yeah, I totally got that.
But no, for me at least, I have a different accent depending where I was in the country when I learned the word I'm speaking. So so from there, eventually settled in Bradford in the early 90s, and that was because I wanted to go to the university's electronic imaging and media communications course, which was, you know, is huge.
But when you say Bradford, for me it conjures, because I know a little bit about the UK, I know what Bradford kind of represents. I've never been there. For our US listeners, like, three words to describe Bradford.
I'll be kind. A beleaguered city. It used to be in its heyday a huge textiles hub across the country. We had a lot of textiles, wool, etc., coming through the city. That changed as people's needs generally do. And people would complain, "Oh, Bradford, you know, we've had a lot of immigrants in. I see hardworking people wanting to make a go of their lives." And, you know, can absolutely respect that. But the Bradford, for me, was a creative nexus. It was my creative hub. It was a place where I learned my place in life.
That's really interesting. So what is creativity or art for you? What does that mean?
For creativity art, I'd say art is a conversation. But it's a mirror. It starts as a dirty, filthy mirror you hold up to yourself, broken, scratched mirror, to try and capture an aspect of your internal metaphors, internal structure in which you build your personality, build your sense of identity and self around. And you hold that mirror up and you just capture something that speaks to you aesthetically. But anyway, you hold the mirror up to your soul and give a part of yourself, capture it in the glass. And that is the first step towards creating art. You've captured a part of yourself that's private and internal, and you've given it form. The second part of it comes when somebody else comes along and looks into that mirror themselves. And just briefly, if they're willing to give a part of themselves to understanding who you are as an artist, you meet that gaze within the mirror and they see you and you see them in their interpretation of what you've created. And that's kind of
I find that fascinating because for me, the spectator is very much the person who makes something, a piece of art, rather than a sort of piece of self-gratification. So it's interesting for you to bring that up. And you must have met people over the years who have sort of reflected that back at you, like, you know, fans or people who watch you, or like, what is the kind of, you know, is there ever any kind of feedback that you've gotten or anyone that you've met or any stories, you know, from a spectator's point of view of how their art has touched them or affected them in any way?
I'd say that being in Solstice, one of the first bands I got into when I moved to Bradford in the early 90s, and I've been into the band as a fan for most of my life. They are a band which defines who I am as a musician. So playing in the band is just a dream come true. And before I was on stage, I was always one of the guys down the front there. And to be honest, when I'm playing, my heart's still with the guys down the front, the headbangers, the diehards, the people who've kept the support going. And it's weird because I don't see myself as being somebody as a musician who plays to inspire people. I play because I'm honoring the music I grew up on. I'm honoring the feeling it gives me to listen to, and except that I get to actually jump up and down on stage for an hour. Well, okay, it's doom metal, so there's not that much jumping. But no, I just feel that some people I've talked to said they really enjoyed the show, and I've really appreciated that. And it's less like, you know, I'm just a conduit for the music that inspires me. In that case, you know, it comes through me. I give it my own color. I give it my own interpretation. But I mean, these are songs I've grown up on, and these are songs which are defined who I am as a person. Of course, so I'm going to have this sense of ultimate gratitude that people are coming along and they're screaming and they're going crazy and they're pumping the air, however people get into the music, and they are enjoying what I'm doing. And I know it's like you want art to be inspirational. You want art to mean something to other people. You want to make that connection. You want to be acknowledged. You want to be recognized for what you do. And that single, it's always carried with me, not just with the music I do, but in the writing I do, my photography, etc. All my creative endeavors are really a sense of trying to make that connection and seeing that aspect of myself interpreted from a different perspective. And that's where the secondary person comes into play, the person who perceives the art. Mm-hmm. So how do they see me when I've got this perfectly structured internal image of myself, which has very little basis on reality? It just really, for me, it's wanting to get what I do out there and see what people think about it. And then, because they say about art being a self, you know, it's not just a selfish process, because you could easily do things selfishly and say, okay, I'm brilliant, whatever, I'm going to write this down, I'm not going to share it. But if you're doing it, if you're making the effort to release something that other people are going to look at and interpret, then of course, you know, I'm going to want to know what they think about it. And it's not this hunger of needing to be acknowledged, need to be recognized. It's just like curiosity.
Yeah, like there's a lot of stuff going on there in what you said. Like there's this sort of the conduit, the idea of like being the vehicle between the art and the audience, and also coming from the perspective of being the spectator, and who's now the spectator looking back at the other spectators. And also a very communal experience. And I know that you, like me, practice magic and have an interest in the occult. So how much does that sort of thought process in terms of like your spiritual relationship, how does that relate to the art that you create or your music?
I think that... spirituality is a core tenet of creativity, that you're essentially channeling some form of, I wouldn't say in what I do on stage with the band, it's that, you know, that is an expression of joy, that is an expression of gratitude. You know, joy is a terrible word to say for doom metal, I admit, but that's
a beautiful thing to go on stage with, though. You know, like I'm actually going to take that on board myself. You know, like going on stage, like I'm going on stage with like joy and gratitude, because it is very much a place of privilege, and you do feel very fortunate anytime, especially in these days, when you have, you know, the fortune of being on stage and presenting work to people who are happy to listen or give it some time, you know.
Exactly. But as far as the magical side of me goes, possibly as a result of getting into Games Workshop and Warhammer back in the 80s, I found a torturous route towards chaos magic in the 90s. And for that, that was really came from me looking at the options which were suddenly widely available. Now I'm, you know, now I can look beyond the little villages I was living in. Obviously, I was in Bradford. I had access to more knowledge. The beast with 1,000 nodes, the internet, just manifested out of out of depth. So suddenly, I was sat atop a very, very poorly filtered repository of the world's knowledge. And from that, I was starting to see the connections because, as you may have noticed by the way this conversation's been jumping around, I don't so much see things in a linear sense. I see things as a hyperdimensional matrix. So trying to navigate my thoughts through that pattern is always fun. But I think it comes from looking at the various paths that people follow, the various belief systems that they pin their, again, pinning their sense of self up against, and noticing the similarities and realizing that a lot of magic is spicy psychology. And these are common aspects, common elements found throughout the world's cultures, just in different forms. I mean, there's always going to be an adversary. There's always going to be somewhere along the line, there's going to be a virgin-born child that comes around the winter solstice. You know, Christ, Mithras, whatever. It's like these are all common elements. And from that, I realize it's not so much the person or the god, because a god is just an idea with delusions of grandeur. But it's the principles. It's how humanity projects their sense of self into the cosmos. And for chaos magic, it's like, okay, we've got these concepts, we've got these archetypes where we want to invoke a certain sense of being in oneself. We want to achieve something, we want to manifest success, we want to manifest bravery, we want to manifest boldness, whatever. We need to achieve change within ourselves at some point. How do we do that? And look back and realize everybody has their own archetypes that become the it's essentially their own private pantheons. And for me, I've always called my system chaos magic, well, a chaos magic influence system, as a pick and myth philosophy, in that you pick things from mythology that work for you and you take that system, which is unique entirely to how you've been brought up, entirely what you've experienced in your own life, because, you know, it's not a one size fits all concept. You know, you have to look inside yourself and you realize, okay, why am I attracted to this fictional character? Because, you know, they're all fictional characters in the end. So we are fictional characters in somebody else's narrative, but we look back at those aspects and how they resonate within yourself, and you think, okay, I like the feeling that this concept brings to me. How can I manifest this concept stronger, in a stronger way? So from that, you realize that, yep, 99% of all of this is bullshit, and pardon my language, but that 1%, that is the crucial thing, that is the common core in every human experience, and that is just the act of humanity trying to understand itself. And from that,
why do you think there was something rather than nothing?
Something rather than nothing. Okay, that's a good one. I see why you brought me here. Right, I have a thinking about it. Is that at some point we have a narrative, we have a fantasy, we have a mythology for the start of the universe. At the moment, it's called the Big Bang Theory. A couple of years down the line, it might be something else. Science never sleeps, and we will discover more about this great origin point, this, you know, this great infinitesimal singularity from which the whole universe sprung from and kept expanding. At that point, there was everything condensed in a single point in life, in existence. And for me, it's a theory, it's all theories, and they say there was a Big Bang. And that point, that singular point of everything, expanded out into the universe we see today. Constantly expanding still, we look into where we think is the core of where it all started, and we see this radio pattern, this slight imperceptible change of heat in the universe. And within that, that is the reflection of everything that made us who we are. We're hydrogen trying to understand itself. And from that explosion, that complicated a mass of everything, we had our base elements. They were flung out into the universe. We had complicated metals. They were flung out into the universe. And at some point, thousands, billions of years ago, a clump of those elements coalesced here around, you know, a yellow star somewhere floating around in space. And through physics, whatever, that coalescence of elements revolved and revolved and revolved. It became a ball. It discovered water, etc., etc., and it became the planet we are on now. Now, that is just the tiniest fragment of that everythingness that was at the start of it all. And we look back, and if somebody looked over at the map, at this heat, this background heat level of the universe, everything we have amounted to, all our hopes, all our dreams, all our gods, all our cathedrals, all our great citadels, castles, all our dominions, all our tiny, petty, pale blue dot quabbles that we have, it would be the tiniest nuance on that heat map. But something echoing in the back of our minds, something echoing in the back of who we are as beings, feels that everything that has become mathematically almost nothing. And as we come together, we're all fractured beings, we're all fractured people. We hold up our mirrors and try to describe each other, describe ourselves to others through our art, through our creativity. We look back and we choose through our perception, through the tiny little lens that exists for about 70, 80, maybe 90 years, through which we can conceptualize the great everything, the great nothing, and everything in between. We can look back and we can say, I choose to make this something. I choose to make my moment here something, because it's sheer bloody-minded stubbornness that makes us do that. But more than that, it's knowing that if we do reach out to people, if we do make our mark, if we do strive to become the people we want to be, we strive to manifest who we can be, we might make that connection. Somebody else might see us in that mirror that we hold up to ourselves, and we might see them. And through all that, we might actually find something. And that matters, and that's what I live for.
Can I just say, we're all hydrogen when we understand ourselves. That is amazing. That's incredible. And that's a spectacular answer. And much more complex, I think, than probably my answer.
Well, it's been a few years. I've done a lot of thinking over here.
Yeah, no, it's always really interesting, because it sounds like such a sort of simple question, like, why is there something and not nothing? And you would expect it to be like, because X or because Y. And it's really fascinating, all of the different answers that people give. So Adara, I know you were kind of worried when I proposed this to you, because you were like, oh, I don't know how I'm going to fill up all this time. Like, you'll be really surprised to know we're going into the 45 minute mark now.
Oh, excellent.
So tell me, how can people connect with you or connect with your work, with your art? Like, maybe there's definitely going to be listeners who have no idea who Salsas are and not familiar with the music, in which case go fucking check it out, you heathens.
Okay, solstice-englander.bandcamp.com for music. But if you want to connect with me, I'm currently working on getting my life organized in some manner of a sort of website to cover all the crazy things I've done over the last couple of decades. But for now, the easiest way, I suppose, would be to go onto Instagram. And my Instagram handle is at Heathenstorm. So HEATHENSTORM. And that's a name that I kind of picked about 20 odd years ago now. And, you know, I like to think, is it something profound? Is it something special? Is it something pretentious? Whatever. And I could look back and say, oh, yeah, Heathenstorm, that's King Lear on the heath with being plagued by his daughters or whatever. Oh, it's a psalm. Why do the heathen storm? Truth be told, it was my Xbox handle, and I thought it was really cool.
It is pretty cool, to be fair. And then, so, like, how is art looking for you in this sort of, I mean, in COVID times? I would normally ask, like, in the year ahead, but, like, let's just focus on, like, you know, the month ahead, or, like, what is, are there things in the, I mean, I guess the UK is more open than Ireland is a shambles right now. Things are closed at 8 o'clock, or like life is over at 8 p.m. here. But I guess the UK is a bit more opened up and you can still possibly play gigs. I don't know. Like, what's the...
There are still gigs happening. At the moment, I'm kind of becoming more used to being in the little village in the middle of nowhere. And it works out. It's working out well for me. I mean, it's given me a chance to start off a lot more new creative processes. I'm working on a novel now, and I've also got my big crazy project called The Servitor, which is this sort of weird conjunction of where magic meets machine learning. So with that one, I'm basically, to use the clincher, teaching an artificial intelligence how to perform magic. And it's
okay. I'm gonna have to follow up on that one.
That's the catching like phrase to bring people in. The when you look at how the sausage is made, it's a lot more mundane, but things usually are when you realize how they work. And it's something that I've had going around my mind since I first got onto the internet back in the 90s. It's like people are, you know, you've got this situation where everybody is connected online and they want to obviously be the best type of person they can be.
They think they're connected online.
But it's something that that came to be about a year ago. It actually got a name. And about a year ago, in fact, a year ago next week, I did some automatic writing and I just described a concept. And basically, we have this wake of data behind ourselves, and we leave it behind ourselves, and it's been exploited quite heavily over social media. We've had our Cambridge Analyticas, they've taken our data and how we post, what we post, etc. And have basically used it to try to subvert democracy by making every important vote that is going on more or less 50-50 by constantly targeting the people who the algorithms predict will swing one way or the other. That's why Trump got in on about 50-50 thing. That's why Brexit came in almost 50-50. Any big vote these days where there's enough sufficient interest in is being subverted by artificial intelligence technology. Now, I didn't know this as much other than in the grandiose sci-fi concept. Did a lot of research into that last year. And it's data science, it's pattern matching. And if there's one thing that is also can also be ascribed to pattern matching, it's synchronicity, magic. It's that you look for patterns in your life that have correspondences. So You know, you pick up Crowley's 777 off the shelf. It's just a load of tables.
There was magic early data science.
It's data science magic.
Ah!
It's observing changes. Now, regardless of whether people believe in astrology or not, there's two facts here. The people who believe in astrology believe in astrology. And the patterns of the stars are trackable, are cyclical, and they're data. You know, the physical position of stars, etc., how it has been interpreted as the zodiac, has been interpreted as the personality traits of people born in those particular month windows. Now, given that, though, that is data, the weather is data. You know, you can look back and say, okay, in social media, when, you know, the sun was in the cusp of pistachio or whatever, you know, you don't have to have any specific names here.
When the sun was in the cashew nut of the morning.
But that's the thing. It's like the stars don't look down on us and say, okay, that person was born underneath me, I'm going to influence them. It's an observation made from within that projects our sense of self out into the cosmos. So, knowing all of that, we've got the position of the stars as data elements, we've got the weather, we've got what people post online. We can match we can use semantic analysis, and that's, you know, really, really common these days, work out exactly what type of tone, what type of mood a person is in when they post something. We can look at the pictures they post. Are they posting a lot of selfies? Is there a reason why they're posting selfies? Check the eyes, check the mouth. Do they match? Are they sad in their eyes but happy in their mouths? Things like that.
Oh, facial analysis. Creepy, Daryl. This is so mental.
And this is all stuff that we give willingly, and yeah, it has been weaponized against us. Now, what I'm suggesting is that we use these to feed an engine. I call it the apophenia engine. It's basically finding these patterns in what we do and matching them together and analyzing them to say, okay, like last year at this time, for this particular set of stars, this particular weather, whatever, you were in this mindset and you didn't want to be in that mindset. How can we improve your mindset now? How can we manifest a better version of yourself? First, you're aware of that. Now you need to communicate back to the user. How can you explain that? And how can you achieve that change in a person? Now, the thing about magic is, you know, there's probably some person out there who reads a lot of books and they said, no, that's not magic. That's not magic. You know, your computers don't do magic, but people do. And by influencing through, I mean, you're familiar with sigil magic, aren't you? That you do, mm-hmm. you manifest your intent in a phrase. Scribble out the vowels, wibble them around.
It's so fascinating because I think one of the most kind of extreme sort of examples I've heard of this being exploited is like Spotify sort of capitalizing on your algorithm of your what songs you're playing. Do you know what I mean? So they're like, oh, you know, Rachel plays these kind of songs and we can correlate them with her, you know, like Spotify knows what fucking mood I'm in. That's mad. Like, well, you know, don't know what mood I'm in, my friends don't but Spotify fucking knows, like, because I've played, you know, X song, or I've listened to a certain podcast or whatever. And the thoughts of that being weaponized against you. But what you're talking about is like a more positive kind of almost mental health approach of like
a democratization of it.
Yeah, we've noticed that you might be a bit, you know, angry today. Like, do you want to? Well, I don't know. How do you deal with that information? Like, what is the follow up?
Well, by, for example, suggesting maybe you want to listen to something else on Spotify. Now, when all this started, I became very, very aware of how artificial intelligence tracks me. It's like you mentioned Spotify. And the machine learning algorithms they have there did something terrifying. Now, if you go back to Donald Rumsfeld, you know, the great warmonger, and his great comment about there's things we know, there's things we don't know that we know, there's things we know that we don't know, etc. But the crucial one is the things that don't...
Sorry, his window, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Now, the things that we don't know that we know are the interesting ones, because they're the ones where we've got all the data there, but we didn't know it was happening. And we didn't make that correlation. And it happens with Spotify. And it came up like last year because I chose to make myself aware of this. And now what the thinker thinks, the prover proves. So I said, okay, I'm going to be aware of this. Let's see it happen. And it started, I was listening to one band and it started to recommend stuff that I really liked from completely unrelated genres. And it was just like looking into what my private playlist would be if it was on Spotify. And it just terrified me. It's like, okay.
But it is on Spotify. That's the terrifying thing.
Well, I'm listening to black metal, and then it recommends some Witch Hazel, Christian rock, you know. sorry, Christian true metal. I do apologize there, but not the type of thing that you'd expect from listening to black metal. And it understood all of this about me. And that was absolutely fascinating because it's the unknown knowns that are falling out the bottom of all these algorithms and all these neural networks. And it's fascinating for sense.
Actually, the unknown knowns are knowns.
Exactly. Well, it's things that we don't know that we know about ourselves.
And
it's
known knowns that should be unknown.
The unknown knowns, Voivod. But anyway, what's come out of all of that is, now we know this, and especially with Spotify, it just track what type of mood your music is, and it can work out whether you're happy and sad from that. That's low-hanging fruit. I can just pull that up today. But more complicated analysis of, like, the images we post and how we post and what colours we use, especially, how that relates to going back to Crowley 777, all the tables. Okay, you got your Queen's colour scheme there, right? Okay, what does yellow mean there? What planet does that mean, etc.? How does that relate to the astrology data that we've pulled in? Things like that.
Well, you know, when you say it, as I read tarot cards, it's no different than being like, oh, you're drawn to this tarot card or that card, or like, and is there a huge amount of difference? It's like, it's a decision that someone's made that you can read into, you know?
Whether they know they've made it or not. Yeah. And be funny you should mention tarot, because what this ultimately creates on the other side is, I don't know if you've seen the toys that people are playing with now, media synthesis toys, where they like type in a phrase into an artificial intelligence thing and it creates artwork for them.
No, what is this?
All right. I think there's one called a Womba or Womba, something like that. I can send you the link afterwards or whatever. But I've been playing a lot with that as a sigil visualization engine. And at the end of it, so we don't have the intent of a person writing down a sigil. We want to create something that would correspond to their subconscious in the same manner. So again, we look at what they've been posting. Okay, we want somebody to remind themselves at home. Where were they born? Like, you say you were born in Dublin, lived in Kildare. Things like that. So if you wanted to be reminded of a time when you were in Kildare and that gave you a certain sense of mental, a certain mental space, then you could throw out into this image generator, throw out a image sourced using some landmarks from around Kildare that would resonate with you personally as a form of your own personal tarot, generated based on the personality that the servitor believes you've created, that believes who you are. So by learning who you are from how you've posted and when you've posted, etc., and anything else you choose to willingly give it, it can then work out who you are and then resonate with that level of your subconsciousness. Again, throw in some sigils, use a bit of gematria, knowing what your favorite planets are, throw out the words and concepts, put them, merge them together, create a video or a image that you can look at and say, okay, think about this for a while. How does this make you feel? And then by looking at how you felt before you've come into the system and how you come in afterwards, I believe, and in my analysis, in the prototypes that I ran, I mean, I ran the first renderer of the, like, first prototype of it yesterday. Fair enough, it was very, very glitchy, so I wouldn't recommend people tune in if they have a sensitive disposition.
Well, if they wanted to, how would they tune in?
It's on my Instagram.
Okay.
And, it's something I call glitch magic, and it's really finding a way to speak to the subconscious, because ultimately, when you declare your intention in sigil magic, chaos magic, you write down what you want to do, you make a squiggle out of it, you enter a gnosis state while observing the sigil, and mm-hmm. for the sake of folks at home, I won't explain what that entails, and then you discard the sigil, because at that point, that image has embedded itself in your subconsciousness and you don't realize it, and you will subconsciously then, spicy psychology, end up trying to manifest that concept through your actions, through being aware of synchronicities in the real world and through observing. So essentially what Servitor is, yep, it's magic. It's the process of understanding who you are and understanding what it takes to make you the person you want to be. And, you know, it's like I needed a hobby during lockdown. So I figured immanentizing.
That is one hell of a hobby.
Immanentizing the Eschaton seems as good a hobby as any. So,
I mean, yeah, absolutely. It seems, you know, and you know, like I said, it seems to like tap into people's wellness and their headspace and where they're at. And I think most of us can identify with struggling with those things over the last, year or two.
And the thing is, now I've said it, this is the first time I've actually declared it in something resembling a public forum. I've had some trusted friends that I've worked on with it over the last year now. It's starting to work for them. A friend of mine, I call her the Wood Woman, after Baffery. She is a sort of Danish shaman. She has started using the principles in her own work. And, she has started, you know, she's now one of my main contributors because she's realized that, hold on, there is something that works here. And we're still stitching it together slowly because, you know, this could be my magnum opus. This could be my lifelong project. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I do want to work on it. I do want to continue with what I've discovered just because I think there's some worth in it. And it is about empowering people. It's not about taking their data and using it against them, weaponizing their online existence. Because everybody lives online these days. And how many people have had their social lives reduced to staring at screens and looking at video cameras?
Well, look at us right now, you know.
Exactly.
Here we are, and we should have met in the mountains twice. This is the last time that we met. But, yeah, so if you're trying to find Daryl, it's at Heathen Storm, which is H. But if your English is probably H. H-E-A-T-H-E-N-S-T-O-R-M. Daryl, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you to KV, Kevin Volante, for allowing this Irish takeover. I feel like there might be more ahead. Because, you know, everyone needs a bit of a break. Everyone needs to stop. Everyone needs to take a day out and a holiday and all the rest. Daryl, I'll hopefully see you in June?
June-ish. If the mountain is happening and they let me out of the country, most definitely. If not, I'm certain we shall cross paths at some future juncture.
Yes. It's been so nice to talk to you. This is Something Rather Than Nothing.